Here in East Tennessee, there is a podcast that looks at the Black experience in Appalachia.
I'm Angela Dennis, editor and journalist specializing in race and socioeconomic issues.
I'm Nkesha Elamine, a sociologist who specializes in race and place and Black Appalachian experiences.
And you're listening to
the Black in Appalachia podcast.
The Black in Appalachia podcast is a product of a partnership with East Tennessee PBS. A few weeks ago, I spoke with the co-hosts, Dr. Nkesha Elamine, a lecturer at the University of Tennessee, Knoxville, and Angela Dennis, a journalist and literary activist, along with William Isom, director of Black in Appalachia. Angela, William, Nkesha, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Tell us how this podcast began. It's part of an initiative.
So I think understanding the podcast requires understanding the initiative a little bit first, and then we'll jump into podcast. So William, wanna do your thing?
Okay. Yeah. So the Black in Appalachia initiative came about kind of out of the thing that local public television stations do best, and that's the production of short, locally specific documentaries or stories. And so we produced a documentary about Swift Memorial Institute, which was a historically Black college in Rogersville, Tennessee, up in Hawkins County. And Chris Smith at the time, who's the director of production development, said, and we named it Black in Appalachia. We named it Blacks in Appalachia at first, after the book that Dr. William Turner wrote. Chris Smith said, we should keep doing this. And I said, okay. And so took off and kept just kept doing as much as I could possibly do in recording and documenting Black history in the region. We moved from there and started producing. We worked for about 3 years on production of a documentary about the 8th of August, which is the Emancipation Celebration that occurs in East Tennessee. It's the date that Andrew Johnson freed his own personal slaves, August 8th, 1863. So we just built from that. And we've did modern documentary photography. We have a community history database. We do census data collection. We do lots of digging and researching because these stories have been obscured and lost to time. And so Chris Smith similarly was like, hey, there's this thing through PRX, which is the Public Radio Exchange. We should do a podcast. And I said, I don't want to do a podcast. I've got enough to do. But I said, there's a couple of people I want to talk to about it. And lo and behold, take it away.
Yeah, so they reached out, the two of them reached out to me about the podcast, and I had been doing research on Black Knoxville within the context of Appalachia for I don't know how many years now, but it's part of my dissertation work on Black Knoxville and Black Appalachia. And so when they reached out to me, I was super excited, super nervous. You know, I'm not a podcaster by training or anything like that, but I was excited for the opportunity. And so we went through the PRX training. And shortly after we begun the training, we brought Angela on board. And we've just started in figuring out what is our purpose in doing this. And one of the things that, you know, became really important to us early on as we started figuring out the podcast was that, one, we wanted to take a lot of the stories that, you know, William and Chris and others have been compiling and, you know, creating these databases and things like that and taking it to the public, right? In a way that was digestible, a way that we can reach wider audiences. And then the other thing was really thinking about the young people in the region. For many young Black people in Appalachia, the option to stay is not, you know, it's not one that they feel that they can take, right? After high school, a lot of times young folks leave this region because they don't feel like they have opportunities here. They don't feel like they can claim this space as their own and you know, feel empowered to do the work that is required for them to stay and to be, you know, to live productive, well lives here. And so we really took that and you know, really wanted to think about how we can produce a podcast that was very history heavy and oftentimes not good histories, right? Like often horrible stories, often stories of struggle, but resilience. And we wanted to take those stories and use them to empower our young people in Appalachia, young Black folks in Appalachia. So we really thought about the feel that this podcast would have, right? Making sure that as much as we're giving and teaching, we're also keeping it light, keeping it approachable, comfortable for our young folks to listen to and to want to hear more of and want to engage with us. I'll pause here and let Angela come in.
So I think I'm probably more so like a lot of our listeners. I don't exactly have the education that William and Nkeshi have on the background of Appalachia. I'm a journalist, so I was doing a lot of writing on race and socioeconomic issues and some history. So I think me coming in kind of gives it a different perspective as someone who's almost, I guess, knowledgeable, but also like a student. So I'm able to ask the questions.
In asking the questions, you're all playing detectives here, given the history that has been obscured, so much of that history for so long.
Right.
Definitely. You know, I think a lot of times when you think of a chat cast, which is what we have, you kind of feel like you just go up there and you have a conversation with somebody. And as much as we want people to feel like this is just a conversation, it requires a lot of digging, you know, a lot of research and trying to sort out stories and figure out what's what and fill in gaps and, you know, make inferences, you know. So it's definitely some a lot of fuzzy areas because a lot of our history, a lot of Black history in this region has not been kept in the way that other histories may have been kept. A lot of times, you know, by the time we get to something, it's too late, right? Just thinking about the schoolhouses that William's been researching recently, and you know, the buildings are no longer there, right? You know, so we're digging and finding some things here and there in the archives, but so much of it, like, it just feels like pieces, right? And you have to do so much to try to put it together, to think about, well, maybe these schools were around in the 30s and 40s. Maybe we can find somebody who will, you know, have a real connection to them, right? And get their story. So it's definitely a lot of investigative work.
And I was struck by something that one of you said on one of the podcasts. It's not the only story that we're telling. There's a conscious, consistent effort to tell as many stories from that experience that you can uncover as possible. And that hit home for me when you were doing the podcast about coal country and really adding to my understanding and the understanding of anybody else who listens of the many tributaries that flowed into what we call the Great Migration of the last century.
Right, right. I mean, I think that's the one story that's definitely resonated with us. And when we think about in and through Appalachia, that's a word that a phrase that we use often. And it comes from those coal mining stories, that coal mining migration stories. And as much as, again, we get a few things in high school about Black history, and the Great Migration is usually one of them. But it took for us to be adults to learn that there are different ways to even understand the Great Migration, and so much of its richness, so much of the nuances are lost when we get just a narrow story, right? Even thinking about Appalachia, right? There's one narrative of Appalachia that's dominant, right? Even when we get something that might be a little bit different, you know, it's still kind of within a particular frame, right? And so, you know, our theme is that we're going to tell a different story. We're going to tell a different Appalachian story. And we're going to try to tell as many of the stories as we can, just to show the complexity of the region and the complexity of Black people in America in general, right? Because what we learn in Appalachia, the stories that we get here, how we understand Black life in this region helps us to think about and learn about Black life across the country.
One of the things I think, just to kind of echo and build off of what Nkeshi was talking about, is like, it doesn't take much for you to be able to dig. You just have to dig a little bit and you can find like these vast narratives of Black experience and history in every nook and cranny of the region. So for example, there's a thing recently that I discovered, or I had learned about Chattanooga, that Chattanooga had at one point one of the largest UNIA chapters in the country. There were tens of thousands of UNIA members, which is the Universal Negro Improvement Association, the Garveyites, Marcus Garvey's movement. And there was like some like gun battles with the police and stuff. And so I think another short example, I have a buddy that lives in Hancock County, Tennessee, which is a very rural, very they call it economically depressed area, is the term that they get labeled with. But on his road, I started picking a little bit, and we found like this whole narrative and whole history about this Black farming community that used to live on his road. And there was a school and there was a church and a cemetery, and some of the older people in the community, white people in the community, knew the story of these people. I mean, this has happened, just happenstance. We just started like looking to see if there was this, if there was any Black history around his farm, and lo and behold, there was. And I don't think that that's unique. I think that that exists in all the little spaces that people have lived.
And I'll add to that, one of the things that we think about in this project is, you know, when we think about empowering people, giving people some tools and some sort of models to go in into their own communities and discover, do the little digging and discover some of those stories, right? We are definitely not going to be able to touch every little town in the region, maybe one day, but like people who are listening, who are excited about what they're hearing and are curious, we want them to feel like you can go and find out about what's going on or what went on in your community and what's the Black history around wherever you live.
And I'm struck by how you do all of that work and it comes across as conversational from start to finish.
Well, I think that's a good thing. I think it's conversational a lot because for me as a journalist, you know, I'm used to asking, you know, the questions and doing the interviewing, things like how we are on this podcast right now. And I think for me, it just comes natural to speak with Nkechi and get my information, my knowledge at the same time from her. It's helping me as well to become more connected, you know, to my Appalachian identity and learn more of the history as well.
I think that it helps that, you know, we are two Black women, similar ages. We have some of the same reference points and some of the pop cultural references that we can have a conversation about something that's historic or heavy or whatever, but like find some humor in it or just kind of talk about it as if we were just talking to each other and we're learning this. And we are talking to each other a lot of times, also learning along the way. And so I think it helps just like being two women who are comfortable with each other to kind of keep that feel. We like each other.
That helps.
Yeah.
I was particularly struck by that in listening to the podcast about sundowner towns and hearing about Corbin, Kentucky, and weaving in everything from what sundowner towns were to KFC to Get Out.
Yes. So that was an experience where, of course, like we went on the road and we actually traveled there. And, you know, again, we hope to like be able to do more of that, but COVID has made it difficult. But I think that's key in telling these stories is actually being on the ground.
And I think that we, again, we understand who our audiences are, or at least who we are making the podcast for. Everybody can listen, but when we think about who our target is, we want to make sure that they can connect to it, right? So that's part of why we use the pop culture references. And again, these are things that we are dealing with in our lives or seeing or experiencing. You know, we all saw Get Out. We can all relate to eating KFC, for example, or whatever. So we want to make sure that it's relatable, again, because history can often appear boring to people, right? So using that those references, just laughing and having a good time, the goal is to open up so that people can feel welcome to come in, right? So to make it approachable, to make it relatable, to make it something that folks in their, you know, 20s or younger, and obviously older, can connect to. And, you know, not just, it doesn't seem like a lecture.
Right, right.
What are you working on now and how are you working during COVID-19?
COVID has affected things, especially earlier on. You know, we were, I think, traveling more at the time. And now, you know, we're in a position where, you know, we're having to kind of keep our trips closer to home. We're recording in the studio, which we're able to do that, which is thankfully. But we're working on a Halloween episode and a episode on politics for the upcoming election.
The good thing about this podcast is that we have so much to pull from the larger initiative and all of the research that's been conducted up until this point and all of the documentary work that's been done. So even if we weren't able to go anywhere, we would have content and information and resources to pull on to make more episodes. That's definitely a positive thing about being a part of this larger initiative.
And then, William, what's next for the initiative beyond the podcast as we're looking to the end of this year and into next?
I'm retiring and moving to Mexico.
You're right.
So in regards to initiative, we're continuing to, there's a couple of components that we're kind of plugging through. We're hoping to really dig into some of the Black history, the personal Black history around Knoxville more. It's a shame that we've produced some documentaries around Knoxville, but we've not really engaged with community members around the stuff that they have in their basements and the things that grandma has in her attic. And so we really want to dig into that in the coming months. Similarly, we're working on a documentary about Knoxville College, the historically Black college that was in Knoxville, continuing to kind of research these more rural Black schools in Southwest Virginia and extreme Northeast Tennessee, these very rural one-room schoolhouses. I think we're going to continue cooking on that stuff right now.
And where can people go online to get the podcast and keep up on the initiative?
So we've got a website, blackinappalachia.org, where we try to put everything up, links to the community history database, the documentaries, the podcast. The link for the podcast is there. And also you can buy t-shirts and stickers and all those things. So the website's kind of this place, kind of this repository for everything that we're doing. And you can search by geography in some cases, but also a more kind of dynamic interaction occurs on social media. So like Facebook, we usually share and cross share articles from different Black initiatives in and around the region. And then Instagram also is a good spot to
hang out with us.
Hang out with us.
All
get
right.
Rid well. Us, Ray. Get rid of us, Ray. Come on.
Well, it's been great to hang out with all of you, albeit virtually. And I just want to say thank you to you and Keshi and William and Angela. And thank you for all that you were doing with Black in Appalachia.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Let's hear more from the Black in Appalachia podcast.
So what you're saying is that there are other migration stories, and Appalachia and coal miners are central to one.
So Appalachian coal fields were actually a great migration destination for many Blacks in the South. And if we think of the Great Migration in waves, migration to Appalachia was actually during some of the earlier waves. So starting in the early 1900s, around 1910 or so, the coal mining industry is sort of establishing itself in places like Eastern Kentucky and West Virginia.
And I know that the people who migrated to the Eastern Kentucky coal fields migrated a generation before African Americans really started moving straight from the South to the northern cities.
Right, exactly. So in this early 1900s period, coal is the primary source of energy in the United States and the main ingredient in the manufacturing of steel.
Right, so this is in the midst of the Industrial Revolution, and also you're gearing up for the Great War.
Exactly. So by the 1920s, coal mining sort of exploded. Again, places like Eastern Kentucky and West Virginia is where we really saw coal just sort of becoming king in the region. Okay, so just to give an example, in Harlan County in 1910, they were producing about 2,000 tons of coal. And then by 1918, they were producing 3 million tons. And so the workers increased. In 1910, you were talking about 170 workers. By 1918, that number was around 4,000 workers. But by 1930, we're looking at that number tripling to 12,000 plus coal miners. This explosion that we're seeing in coal producing is definitely bringing in tens of thousands of laborers and their families to Appalachia. And what is interesting about this explosion and this need for labor is that there was a real strong emphasis on recruiting laborers, right? So they were bringing in foreign laborers from different parts of Europe, places like Germany, Hungary, Poland, Greece, and of course, Black Southerners, right? Especially from Alabama Black Belt. they recruited a large number of Black workers.
Most Black folks who were living in those coal towns, working as miners, were not born or raised there. There was a distinct migration into the region, and I'm talking about for the industry. And the majority of those men were recruited from Alabama.
Catch the rest of this episode and all the episodes of the Black in Appalachia podcast at blackinappalachia.org and wherever you get your podcasts.